If you're staying in here, go ahead and turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 32. And we've been in the book of Genesis since the beginning of the year. And most recently, we've been in the story of Jacob and Esau. And a couple weeks ago, we saw Jacob and Esau, who are brothers, divide over some sin between them. And we saw Esau get to the point in his anger that he wanted to kill his brother Jacob. And so Jacob had to flee to go to some relatives who lived a long ways off. And he has spent 20 years. God has been with him. God has taken care of him. And we saw last week how God is bringing him back to the promised land. He's bringing him back, towards his angry brother Esau. How many of you are kind of worry warts, maybe? I don't know, different terms in different families, but you know, like, you're going to have to do something and you don't want to do it and you dread that. Anybody in the room, like, you dread a conversation or you dread whatever? It doesn't even have to be bad. It could just be something you've built up in your mind and you spend more time worrying about the thing than the thing actually is bad. You know that feeling of anticipating that moment of, what's that conversation going to be like the first time I see them, or I've got to deal with that situation? That's where Jacob is today. He is dreading the first time he sees his brother Esau, but not in a way that's, he's fearful for his life. Because the last time he left, his brother wanted to kill him. Now, Jacob is a complicated character for us. I don't think he's very likable to me. I don't look at Jacob and go, wow, I want to be like Jacob. Jacob is, remember, he's a deceiver. That's what his name means. He's been tricking his way to get what he wants. He's passive. He doesn't stand up as a man in his family and do what he's supposed to do. So he's got a lot of flaws, but he's also got some good things about him. And mainly the good thing about Jacob is what? God is with him. That's the difference in Jacob's life. And the effect of God being with him over the course of his life is changing him and transforming him into this man of faith that he wasn't in the beginning of the story. And so today, Jacob is going to have two encounters with God. And then he's going to encounter his brother, long-lost brother Esau. And what we're going to see in Jacob's life is two things: growth and transformation. Growth and transformation as God has worked on him, and he's even going to change his name to signify this growth and transformation. Those are the two words I really want us to think about this morning as we talk about Jacob and we talk about this movement and Esau and gifts and peace offerings and all those sorts of things. But growth and transformation is what God intends for every single one of us as we walk with him. When we are in a relationship with God, he wants to change us. And not just change us for the sake of change. Some of you change your hair color and your beard shape and all that sort of stuff just because you like change. That's not what God's doing when he's changing us. What's he doing? He's changing us to look and be more like Jesus, to better represent the image of God that we were created with in the beginning. The thing that we broke. He is changing us to look more and more like him. We're not called to remain in our, you know, Jacob wasn't intended to remain Jacob. He needs to change into Israel. He doesn't need to stay in his old identity that's defined by his sin and shortcoming. God's intent for us as we come to church, as we study his word, as we interact with one another in fellowship, we are meant to be transformed and to grow. And so I want you to see that today as we look at this story. So let's look at chapter 32. It'll be on the screen if you don't have a Bible with you. Starting in verse 1 of chapter 32. And it says, Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." And so he called the name of that place Mahanaim. I don't know how to pronounce that. Should have practiced that out loud. Verse 3. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, instructing them, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. And I have oxen and donkeys and flocks, male servants and female servants. and I have sent to tell my Lord in order that I may find favor in your sight. And the messengers returned to Jacob saying, we have come to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you, and there are 400 men with him. And Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. And he divided the people who were with him and the flocks and herds and camels into two camps, thinking, if Esau comes to the one camp and attacks it, then the camp that is left will escape. And so Jacob is making this journey from the far east back to the promised land. And as he enters the kind of the boundary, right at the last little river, last little spot, he realizes this, God's presence is still with him. God, if you remember, Jacob was fleeing for his life. And when he was doing that, he slept in this no-name place. And what happened? He had a dream, and he saw angels ascending and descending to heaven. And he saw God at the top of that, right? And it was God's statement that I am going to be with you. And one day you're going to return to this place. And so as soon as he gets back near, what happens? God sends his messengers, his angels, to remind him of that. God is with you. This is the reason for your blessing, for your favor. This is the reason for your promise, your hope that this is all going to go well, is because God is with you. Now, I think we got to put ourselves in Jacob's mindset for a minute. I don't know if you've ever had a brother try to kill you. Let's don't have our hands raised here. That's a story for after church. But Jacob is fleeing. He'd fled his family. He'd left everything he'd known. He's been there for 20 years. He's got two wives, two kind of wives. He's got 12 kids. He's got dysfunction galore. But now he's responsible for all those people. He's not just coming back and going, hey, I can deal with the consequences of what I did to my brother. Now his sin affects his family, affects his kids and his wives. And we know he can't go back to Laban. He's already set up a treaty that said, hey, I can't go that way. You can't come this way. He has nowhere to move but forward. But forward means conflict. Not only is his life at stake, but so is his family's. And so God sends his messengers to Jacob, I think to comfort him. I think to remind him, hey, I am still with you. I called you to do this. I know this looks hard. I know this feels impossible. And so what does Jacob do? Jacob receives that. He names the place Mahanaim or whatever. It means two camps. And we're going to see that play out here in a minute. But he sends messengers to Esau. He begins this process of trying to show that he wants peace. He's trying to maybe soften the blow or reduce the consequences that he may be facing. And it kind of feels at first when you read this, okay, this is just Jacob's tricks. This is what Jacob does. He's a trickster. He grabs the heel. He's trying to manipulate the situation to his own advantage. But I want to say this. I think this is true life change in Jacob. This is actual heart change. He's not trying to deceive Esau. He's not trying to pull the cloak and send his hated wife one way and he goes around the other way. There's no tricks. Jacob is humbly submitting to his brother. He's humbly approaching him, submitting to him. He calls him Lord. He calls, I am your servant. He's owning his mistakes. He's dealing with the consequences of those mistakes. And he's trying to move forward to peace. You see, this is growth. This is transformation in Jacob's life. He's actually submitting to the consequences of his own decisions and to God's will for his life. Now, only one problem. What do the messengers come back and tell him? Hey, we met your brother Esau. He's got 400 men with him. You don't have 400 men with you because you're just hanging out in the wilderness somewhere. That's an army. That's a squad. And so Jacob hears this and he becomes so afraid. And he splits the family into two camps. You can almost draw the line without even knowing. If you know the story, you know exactly he's got a camp that he loves and a camp that he hates. But what he does next shows his real transformation. Look at verse 9. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, O Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred that I may do you good. I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. This is the first recorded prayer of Jacob to God. God has spoken to Jacob, but Jacob has not really spoken to God, which is a symbol of his lack of relationship with God. And finally, he comes to a point when he's backed into a corner, when he doesn't know what he's going to do, where does he turn? He turns to God. This is transformation in his life. He's not trying to handle it on his own. He's not trying to pull somebody's heel or do some sort of trick. This is also the longest recorded prayer in the whole book of Genesis. Now, what does Jacob pray? He reminds God, you're the one who told me to do this. This is your word. I'm trying to be obedient. I'm trying to do what you called me to do. So God, please uphold what you said you would do. Fulfill your promise. Jacob also, he confesses his unworthiness. He says, I am not worthy of all the least of the deeds of steadfast love that you have showed me. See, Jacob is humbling himself. He understands who he is, what he's done wrong, how he's messed up. He is humbling himself, and he is recognizing, God, you're the only reason I have anything. He is humble. He also seeks his salvation, not in wisdom to do some sort of trick. He seeks salvation from God. He roots all of his requests in the character of God. God, this is who you said you are, and so I'm trusting you. God, I need you to save me because I can't do this. He is actually expressing faith for the very first time, I think. Jacob's prayer is honest. It's humble. It's rooted in God's promises. This is not the Jacob of before. The Jacob of before would have schemed and worked and tried to figure out how he could do it on his own to achieve success, to reach his desired outcome. But now he's probably about a 60-year-old man, and he's finally realized, I need to submit to God. I have nothing. I can only rely on the Lord. And so next, and we're not going to read all of this, but in verse 13 through 21, out of this trust of God, Jacob sends his brother Esau this peace offering. He willingly gives up a bunch of his stuff, and he accepts his wrongdoing, and he starts to send all these gifts towards his brother as a picture of repayment. But it's a symbol. Remember, what did Jacob steal from Esau? He stole his what? His blessing. Right? He stole his blessing, which was viewed as God's presence with them that would lead to success. Now Jacob is now giving that blessing back to Esau, right? It's a repayment of his wrong. We're not going to read all the details, but he sends hundreds and hundreds of animals in these waves, wave after wave. This is an immense gift, right? And his hope is, maybe, just maybe, if I take care of all of this, maybe when we meet face to face, that it'll be okay. There will be peace. Look at verse 22. Skip down. So he begins this plan, and he goes to sleep that night. The next day, he's going to encounter Esau. And here's what it says, verse 22. You might be confused for a sec. The same night, he arose. And he took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and he crossed the ford of the Jabbok. And he took them, and he sent them across the stream, and everything else that he had, and Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day has broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob," which means deceiver. And he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God, you have wrestled with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. And so Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, meaning face of God, saying, I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. And the sun rose up on him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. And therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that's on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh. If you're slightly confused, welcome to the club. There's a lot of unanswered questions. There's some missing detail in here that I would like to know, right? There's a lot of questions we have about this story that don't really make a whole lot of sense. But here's what we do know happened. Jacob, all of a sudden, is alone again, right outside the promised land. And what happens? God shows up. This time he shows up in the form of a man. And you're thinking, is it Jesus? Is it an angel of the Lord? Is it something else? I don't know. I don't have that answer today for you. But God shows up in the form of this man. And when two men get together in the wilderness, you know what happens. Everybody knows, right? A wrestling match ensues, right? Obviously, clearly, just joking. Somehow, this is a wrestling match ensues. And Jacob almost prevails. God has somehow showed up, humbled himself to the point of being in the form of a man, and he has put on flesh with all of its limitations, and Jacob's strength has almost prevailed. And to the point that God says, "Now I'm going to make sure you know." And he touches his hip, and it changes his hip. It causes this sciatic nerve hip damage that Jacob never recovers from. He has a limp the rest of his life. But Jacob is hard-headed enough, and I know some of you are like this. When you wrestle, you're hard-headed enough, you're not letting go. You're not tapping out. Chase Phillips, I'm thinking about you. I'm sitting on the front row this morning. Jacob will not let go. I'm not letting go. I'm clinging to you, God, until you bless me. I'm not letting go, no matter what you do. And God blesses him. He blesses him, and he changes his name. You're no longer your name that carries all this shame, that you're a deceiver, you're a trickster. No, I'm changing your name to Israel, which means to wrestle with God and prevail, to win. See, when God changes names, when he gives names, we've talked about this many times, it symbolizes purpose and meaning. And so Jacob, now that he's had this interaction with God, God's saying, you're no longer just this. I am transforming you and changing you into something new. I'm making you something brand new. And this symbolizes Jacob's and his people for the rest of their life, their struggle with God, their wrestling with God. And he walks away, now Israel. He walks away, he limps away, probably more accurately. And this limp is a symbol, right? It's a reminder constantly of his weakness and God's strength. It's a reminder of his limitations and God's immense power. That this is true for all of us, right? We all have limitations. We all have brokenness that we carry with us as a reminder of where we have fallen short. Paul says it, when I am weak, then I am strong. See, in Israel here, Jacob, he's finally learned this, that walking with God is not about him earning it, getting what he wants, doing whatever it takes to get what he wants. It's about submitting to and trusting in God. And I think for the first time, he finally understands that. Look at verse chapter 33. Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, and 400 men with him. And so he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two female servants. And he put the servants with their children in front, then Leah with her children, and Rachel and Joseph last of all. He himself went on before them, bowing himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And when Esau lifted up his eyes and saw the women and children, he said, "Who are these with you?" And Jacob said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." And the servants drew near, they and their children, and bowed down. Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. And lastly, Joseph and Rachel drew near and they bowed down. Jacob looks up the next morning, and who does he see? Esau and 400 men. And he fears the worst, and so he separates his family from most loved to least loved, right? You can go home today and make your own list, right, of least loved down to the most. I'm just kidding, don't do that. This is not the example for us. In fact, it sounds pretty messed up. He's creating this human shield to protect his most loved in hopes that maybe if Esau attacks, maybe at least Rachel and Joseph will survive. But Jacob is a changed man, and what does he do? He puts himself at the front. He comes forward. He owns responsibility. He's not being passive anymore. He's not letting someone else dictate the story. He is taking ownership of what he did wrong, and he is moving forward protecting his family, as he should. And Jacob finally walks up to his brother that fateful moment, not knowing what's going to happen. And he humbly bows down before his brother, full humility, full submission. And what does God do? God saves him. When we come in full admission of what we've done wrong, in full humility that we have fallen short, that's when God saves. And God intervenes here to rescue Jacob from the hand of Esau. And Esau runs and embraces him and hugs him and kisses him. And these brothers, they reconcile 20 years apart, all this history between them, but they reconcile with tears and gifts and a whole lot of grace and forgiveness. It's an incredible picture of reconciliation. It's an incredible picture of forgiveness and humility and all that it takes for us to have relationships and friendships and family, right? All of those are required to have relationships. If you don't have humility, you probably don't have friends. If you can't forgive, you probably don't have friends or close family. If you can't own where you made a mistake and confess that to other people, then you probably don't have people close to you. This is required in order to have relationships. We hurt one another. We cause pain. But we also can forgive and reconcile and have wisdom in order to bring us back together again. Look at verse 8. And Esau said, "What do you mean by all this company that I meet?" And Jacob answered, "Define favor in the sight of my Lord." But Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." And Jacob said, "No, please, if I have found favor in your sight, then accept my present from your hand. For I have seen your face, which is like seeing the face of God," the place that he is, Peniel, "and you have accepted me. Please accept my blessing that's brought to you because God has dealt graciously with me and because I have enough." Thus he urged him, and Esau took it. Then Esau said, "Let us journey on our way, and I will go ahead of you." But Jacob said to him, "My Lord knows that the children are frail and that the nursing flocks and herds are a care to me. If they are driven hard for one day, all the flocks will die. Let my Lord pass on ahead of his servant, and I will lead on slowly at the pace of the livestock that are ahead of me and at the pace of the children until I come to my Lord in Seir." And so Esau said, "Let me leave you with some of the people who are with me." But Jacob said, "What need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord." So at first, Esau refuses all these gifts. I don't need your stuff. I have enough. But Jacob makes him take it. He wants to repay his brother and to bring this peace between them. Now, I think this story may surprise us a little bit, how this ends, because you might expect that real peace would lead to Jacob and Esau dwelling in the land of Seir forever together until this day, right? Right? Everything was perfect. Everything was fixed, and they were super close. That they would be near to one another. Sorry, Ava. I'm sorry. But that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. They're going to go separate ways. They're going to create some space between them two. Esau tries to get Jacob, "Hey, come travel with me. Let's go. We'll go together, and we'll settle together." But Jacob won't agree. And so then Esau kind of senses, okay, maybe he doesn't want this. Maybe okay, let me leave some men with you so I'm like guaranteeing that you'll come to me. But Jacob says, no, let me find favor with my Lord. In essence, he's saying this. Jacob and Esau, we need to go our separate ways. We've reconciled, we've made peace, we've forgiven and loved one another, but what's best is I need to go this way and you need to go that way. You see, peace doesn't always mean closeness. Peace doesn't always mean intimacy. You see, this side of heaven, our goal in relationships is to make peace. But peace doesn't always mean that we are best friends with everybody, right? Peace doesn't always mean that we live in the same house. That would be awesome. Not. Peace doesn't always mean this deep connection. Sometimes peace means owning your mistakes, forgiving one another, and going your separate ways. That's what we see here. And sometimes distance and disengagement is a good thing for keeping peace. We don't know all of their reasons for this, but it's still a picture of peace. Romans 12:18 says this, "If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all." I have quoted this verse more times in the form of a counseling or a talking to people. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Number one, we're called to seek peace. That's our goal. We want reconciliation. But number two, we're called to act in humility. That means sometimes we have to own up to our mistakes. We have to own up to what we did wrong. And we're called to deal with our faults, right? I messed up. I said that. I did that. You're right. I am so sorry. And I want us to be at peace. But here's the truth of the scripture that I love. It says, as far as it depends on you. You see, we can't control how others react. We can't control if others will act in humility and act in trust. And so we're only responsible for us. We seek peace and we pray that God will grant that, right? That doesn't always mean that we're going to be best friends forever, but we always seek peace and we always own up to what we did wrong. Look how it finishes, verse 16. So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built himself a house and made booths for his livestock. Therefore, the name of that place, this is hard if you got a semi lisp, the place is called Succoth. And Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, on his way from Padan Aram and camped before the city. And from the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, he bought for 100 pieces of money the piece of land on which he had pitched his tent. And he erected an altar, and he called it El Elohe Israel, God, the God of Israel. And so Jacob goes, Esau heads back to Seir, where he's from, the land of Edom. Jacob goes to a place, the same place that God had brought Abraham in his journey from Ur of the Chaldeans all the way to the Promised Land. Jacob's in the same place. And this time he returns to the place of the God of his father and the God of his grandfather, this place Shechem. And he builds an altar just as Abraham had done, but he doesn't call it God, the God of Abraham. He calls it El Elohe Israel, God, the God of me, my God. This is not my father's God. This is not my grandfather's God. This is my God. Because Jacob realizes this, God has fulfilled his promise. He has been with him. He has blessed him. He has multiplied him. He has brought him back safely to the land that he had promised. And this is going to wrap up Jacob's story, really. We're going to see him part of the story, but really from here on out, it shifts to his 12 sons. And God's going to continue to work in their lives. I said there was two things I wanted you to see in this story. Transformation and growth. Transformation is the goal of our walk with God. Just as God changed Jacob from Jacob to Israel, God's desire is to transform us from who we were, what defined us, our mess, our shortcomings. He wants to change us to be more like Christ, a little Christ, a Christian, becoming people who reflect his love, his grace, his humility. And this transformation comes through struggles, just like Jacob's did. It comes through wrestling with God. It comes through trials in life. But this is the goal of our walk with God, is that God would transform us. And number two, God's presence is the foundation for our growth. What made the difference in Jacob's life was God's presence with him. And the only way you and I are going to grow or be transformed as Christians is God's presence with us. We have to draw near to him if he will draw near to us. That's what the scripture says. If we will draw near to him, he will draw near to us. And he promises to change us and make us look more and more like Jesus. Let me pray. God, I thank you for our time together and this morning in your word and studying this story, God. And I thank you for just the honesty that scripture speaks about life and speaks about our shortcomings and our failures. God, I thank you for the story of Jacob and the story of growth and transformation in his life, that he moved from a man who's known by his sin to a man who's known by his relationship with God. God, I pray that wherever we find ourselves today in this room, wherever we're at in a journey of faith or a seeking after you, God, that you would move us closer to you as we move closer to you. God, I pray that you would help us to draw near to you and that you would fulfill your promise to draw near to us, to change us, to shape us, to look more and more like Jesus. God, may we be people of peace in our communities, in our friendships, in our families. May we always, as far as it depends on us, seek peace and seek reconciliation, because that's what Jesus did. He gave the ultimate price in order to reconcile us to God, to make peace between us and God. And so we help us to live that out.